Hi, folks. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 67. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. That is where you'll find where you can chime in with comments and such. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts, where you'll get email notifications notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, let's get to it. Today is going to be another episode of listener feedback, so on and so forth, and just a few updates about what's been going on here over the last week or so. First off, definitely check out the YouTube page, and you can access that from theguitarpodcast.net, of course. If you go to youtube.com/guitarpodcast, that's where you'll find me. So yeah, I've started uploading more videos, lately. And last week I uploaded two pentatonic licks for you to check out. If you already know them, then that's great. If not, check them out, try them out, learn them, use them, have fun with them. And I think that's the beginning of a series of pentatonic licks, just basics on pentatonics, some cool stuff, and try to push pentatonic licks beyond what you know, what you may have done before, maybe pushing me beyond what I've done before in pentatonics. So, but I just uploaded a video on basically what I've done with that Dean Vendetta guitar, and I think it's turned out pretty well. Basically, what I do is I start out playing my old Les Paul, my 87 Les Paul Custom, straight into my Marshall JCM 800, and you know, I play with the bridge pickup and then I play with the neck pickup, and then I switch over to the Vendetta, and there's some photos in the, it's basically a slideshow. You don't actually see me playing, but you hear quite a bit. And so I play on the bridge pickup with the Vendetta and the neck, and just try to illustrate some of the cool things about it, especially since what I really dig about the Seymour Duncan pickups. They sound magnificent. And I definitely think it helps to have a good amp to go into. But I'm sitting here going, this is not an expensive guitar. It looks really cool. The veneer top, the flame veneer top, looks really cool. The tremolo stays in tune. You know, it just feels good. It's a good metal or shredder type guitar. You can do a lot of stuff with it, a lot of finger acrobatics, if my old fingers could do it. And then replacing those pickups, that was really the only shortfall I could find with the guitar thus far. I'm sure it's a basswood body and a veneer top. It just, you know, I think it's a two-piece neck plus the top. The fretboard, the rosewood fretboard placed on it, but you know, it sounds pretty good. I'm fairly pleased with it. I thought about, you know, originally they come with, you pull the tone knob out, and it would tap the pickups. Well, I didn't want to go with that tone pot. I wanted the 500K CTSs, and that basically eliminated that push-pull pot. And what I thought about doing is put mini toggles in there to tap the coils on the bridge and neck. But then I was talking to my friend Mike, and we were talking, it's like, you know, why would I want to tap the bridge? Do I like the sound of a Strat bridge pickup? And I'm going, no, I don't. I like the sound of a Tele bridge pickup or a P90 in the bridge position. But I don't really like that the Strat bridge pickup, single coil pickup. So then I got to thinking, you know, I really like the sound of the bridge pickup as it is. If it's a little too much and I want to get closer to a strat, just roll off the volume a little bit maybe. That'd probably take care of it. I'm pretty sure I'm done with this guitar as far as doing any mods. I may replace the three-way toggle switch to something a little more analog instead of, you know, you'll see in the photo in the slideshow that there's a, I don't remember what it's called, but it's just a box with the three prongs. I may switch that out, but I'm not going to go out of my way to do so. So there's the update on that Dean Vendetta guitar. Something else I ran across that reminded me of something, and I was thinking about this last year, and remember last year they had the Nashville flood ruined a lot of great guitars, and I was sitting there thinking, you know, they're, you know, people thought they were safe in this warehouse and everything, but then again, they weren't because they were right next to the river and they got flooded out and a lot got ruined. Some have been recovered fairly well and been able to, I mean, some surprisingly came back from the dead, and I mean, a lot of people had the written off and they're fine, with work, of course. But something I got to thinking about, well, how could they have protected them? You know, could they, you know, I was thinking to myself and just didn't share, didn't think aloud, didn't go any further than that. But I just saw SKB has watertight cases now. I don't know if they've had these for a while or not, but I just saw these in last month's Guitar Player magazine, and I thought, this has to come from that. It's great. They have a case for Teles and Strats, basically an open cavity for electric guitar for whatever would fit in there, that you could either put your Tele or your Strat or your Paul Reed Smith or Les Paul or whatever. And then they have the Les Paul case, and then the specific to Paul Reed Smith style. And they have bass cases, of course, and bass cases for larger necked basses and so on and so forth. Oh, and dreadnought cases. I don't know if they have anything. They're not advertising anything for like your concert or auditorium or, you know, your narrow necked or your triple O's, those sorts of guitars. But I thought this was great. Basically, you know, SKB has always made really good stuff. And, you know, this is basically their advertisement. I think it's great. If these really, really are watertight, you know, if I were storing some of these, any of my guitars in the basement, and concerned about flooding or near a floodplain, or I lived on a floodplain or restored someplace where, I don't know, you never know. I would store my guitar, excuse me, in one of these cases. The advertisement says All American Family. The SKP family of injected molded watertight flight cases continues to grow with the new American Dreadnought guitar case. The I-Series is truly a unique American innovation developed to protect your favorite guitars from moisture, dust, and baggage handlers. So, you know, I don't know how long they indicate. It sounds like that they've been out for a little bit, but if you knew about them before, that's great. If you didn't and you have a concern about moisture or whatever, long-term storage of your guitar, if you store your guitars in the basement and you have a concern about moisture or flooding, whatnot, you know, this really may be your answer. So I thought I wanted to share that. I thought that was really, really cool. I got this great email from Rob regarding this, to kind of fill you in. We talked, he wired up his guitar, and when he rolled his volume off, it wouldn't go all the way down. It just kind of, about two or so, it would go to almost nothing, and then it would come back a little bit, and mine did that too. And I had a suggestion for him. I thought that maybe he didn't have the jumper wire from the back of each potentiometer connected. And but then again, I shared the link to all the different wiring diagrams on the Seymour Duncan website, and he writes me with this. He wrote me back. Let me see if I can find his last email. Maybe I don't see it. Okay. Yeah, I don't see it. But this one just came. When was it? May have come in today. Yeah, it did. Awesome. With your help, my volume roll-off issue is solved. The wires from my pot to pot were there, but there was a discrepancy in the switch, common terminal, and the input jack. The guitar electronics came pre-wired, but when I rewired to the Seymour Duncan diagram, that did the trick. I can now turn down the volume from 10 and clean up the sound at about 7. I can play down to 1.5 for really clean. Works as it should. Thanks so much. I don't know how long I would have goofed around with this. There wasn't a professional tech who knew what that problem was. I'm keeping those Seymour Duncan diagrams. They are a great resource. I've attached a couple quick photos of the guitar. I think I'm figuring on a maple. On the maple is beautiful. The headstock was custom cut and inlaid with the ebony and M for Mitchell. We call the guitar M1. Have a great day and rock on. Thanks a lot, Rob. I'm really glad that worked out for you. And anybody else who's ever having any time I am going to wire up a guitar, the Seymour Duncan website that has those wiring diagrams, it has a drop down for any, say you have two humbuckers and however you want to wire them up or whatever, or say your humbucker single, it has all sorts of wiring diagrams and it's really, really good. I'd highly, highly recommend utilizing it. But anytime I'm wiring up a guitar from here on out, I'm using that. Rob shared these photos. I would really feel more. I would love to share them on the Facebook page, but I'd really feel more comfortable if you uploaded them there yourself. It's a beautiful guitar. It's a kind of a natural blonde 24 fret. Two humbucker, kind of a Les Paul setup. The humbuckers a little closer together. Looks like a shorter scale. It's a really good looking guitar. Very, very cool. I wanted to share this with you. Steve shared this question on comment and question on the Facebook page. He said, just acquired this very Gibson-esque U.S. Fender Tornado in a trade. I would like to install PAF style pickups. Would like some opinions on the DiMarzio 36th anniversary or the Seymour Duncan Hush 1 and TB59s. Which would you choose? So Brent says, just my two cents. If you want PAF style, I would suggest Seymour Duncan Seth Lovers or the Seymour Duncan Antiquity Humbuckers. Otherwise, the Seymour Duncan Hush 1, which is SH1, I usually just say Hush 1, and the TB59s would be good. I have them in a Les Paul, and they sound really good. I'm not familiar with the DiMarzios. And I said I'm not familiar with the DiMarzio 36s either, but I can say that an old tried and true DiMarzio bucker that's been a replacement in many guitars over the years, this is a super distortion. However, I would totally trust Brent's recommendations on pups and tone. I've known Brent quite a long time, and he's definitely trust his opinion. Thanks, guys. Steve says, thanks, guys. The Guitar World did a review on DiMarzio's on YouTube. If you missed, interested, and so I checked that out, and it was really pretty cool. If you're looking for that classic PAF sound, I've heard many old timers, those who've experienced true PAFs back in the day, much more so than me. Which I really haven't so much other than hearing them on YouTube or hearing them on, you know, recordings, say that burst buckers really do the trick. Of course, no Fender will truly sound like a Les Paul, but I get it. Those pickups sound really good and classic. Steve says, you're right, but if there was a Fender to get close, it would be this one. Mahogany body, 24 3/4 inch scale, and a Tune-O-Matic bridge. It's still a Fender, though. He says, and I agree. Yeah, you know, and I say, it might sound pretty close with the wood, scale, pups, and bridge. it might be a bit brighter because of the bolt-on neck, but that might make it sound more or less Paul than SG. I'd love to hear what you decide upon. DiMarzio and Seymour Duncan both historically have made great pickups. And Steve says he'll keep us updated. Thought he had it narrowed down to two. Now he has a few more to consider. What I put in the neck pickup position on my Dean is a Hush One, and it sounds really good. I really like it. It has a good classic sound to it. Not as classic as, say, my Les Paul. My Les Paul, actually, in comparison to the other, sounded a little mushy. But I think that kind of goes along with having that classic tone. I don't want all my guitars to sound the same. You know, you want to have a certain tool for a certain sound. You need something to act one way in one situation, and then something else to serve another purpose. So I wanted to share that email with you. This kind of goes back to a question we had. All right. Well, this comment thread on the Facebook page is with Michael, and he's in Australia, and stems from a conversation talking about Gibson, and basically that prices on Gibsons in Australia is quite a bit more than what we're charged here. He says in Australia, Gibson Les Paul Studio 50s Tribute Humbucker Ebony New is $1,600. A Gibson Les Paul Traditional New is anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000. And he'd like to own an older Gibson Semi, but they just cost too much here, and a new one is out of reach for him right now. Musician's Friend lists Traditionals for just under $2,000, $800 to $1,000 for the Gibson Les Paul Studio 60s Tribute. Sounds like 50% more in Australia. It sounds to me like in Australia they're paying almost the retail price, whereas here in the U.S. we get a discount. Michael says, I forgot to say that the new prices are quite a bit lower than RRP or street price, but I got these prices from one of the cheaper retailers over here, and I've seen them a lot higher, and the price of pedals is really out there. The old Orange Boss OD Overdrive I've seen new for $125. As you would imagine, I don't buy much local, so wow. Do you buy from Musician's Friend? I asked, do you buy from Musician's Friend or elsewhere? Do you pay extra taxes for imports? And Michael says, I have not tried Musician's Friend. Some of those bigger retailers in the U.S. don't ship our way. I have bought from pedal builders and shops that sell boutique pedals. You pay tax on goods over $1,000, and if you're looking at shipping a higher dollar guitar, it costs around $500-ish for FedEx. I don't like to buy guitars without trying them first, but I did just get a little Eastwood HT44 for $580. Shipping was only $90, which I'm pleased with. Even with shipping and expensive guitars, it's still cheaper, I know, if a few friends who do this. I also buy a lot from the gear page and eBay, but anything boutique or not run-of-the-mill, not Fender or Gibson or Marshall, costs too much. And I want to comment on that. You know, it's pretty cool that the gear page has reached around the world too. You know, I'm not one who typically ships whenever I list anything on eBay. Honestly, I typically don't ship internationally. Knowing this, maybe I'll reconsider just understanding how expensive it is for people outside of the U.S. I wonder how it is in England too, and elsewhere in Europe. So, no, Australia is quite a ways away. That's just my little 2 cents in there. Michael continues with, for example, I bought a Rickenbacker 330, one of my favorite guitars, and that was over a year ago. It was S/H, and I don't know what that means, but good condition. Not shipping, second hand. Well, for the shop I bought it from, hadn't had any since because they were very hard to come by here. I went to Tokyo this year and went into a guitar shop, and there were 12 of them, and one was vintage 60s. I could have bought that one and saved $600 instead of the one I bought here. You guys have a great choice over there, and maybe that's for the best, because if the wife finds me with another guitar, I may be homeless. I have 9 at the moment. The other problem is I have I cannot sell any gear. I don't want to. I have when I was younger and regretted it, so I don't. Now, I totally understand that, Michael. My wife almost won't let me sell any guitars because she doesn't want to hear me cry about it weeks later. So, yeah. But again, folks, I know I'm not going to tell you what to do or anything on this, but you know, if you're like me and you don't ship internationally, whenever you're selling things on eBay, and you keep this in mind that they pay so it's so much more difficult for them. You know, if you want to kind of help your fellow guitar players out internationally, you may want to reconsider that. Shane asks, have you ever addressed the subject of DI boxes? That's a direct input boxes or direct box. I have not talked about direct boxes. It's a good idea, though. And I asked, is there anything specifically that you would like me to cover, or basically everything? And Shane says, sure, whether or not you really need one, the pros and cons and difference, if any, between Radio Shack Transformer and an actual DI box. I do electric and acoustic in church and fixed PA and mixing board. I also use a Boss GT8 with left and right outputs, but end up using mostly the left mono output. I'd love to use both left and right stereo, but I can't get it to work unless I use two channels on the board. I've tried sending you an email on this, but it kicked back on me. Thanks, man. By the way, I really enjoyed your podcast. Shane, I'm not sure why you got the email kickback. It may be because, I don't know, but I would say go to the guitarpodcast.net webpage and contact me there with that contact form, or contact me on here. It's a really good way of getting a hold of me. Something I suspect that may be happening is that you may be typing in info@theguitarpodcast.com instead of .net. I don't have the .com domain. I wasn't willing to fork over buku bucks to get it. So I'm not sure if that's the issue. Anyway, to get to your question regarding DI boxes, those that you know, I want to bring the rest of the audience up to speed that doesn't know what a direct box is or may not use a direct box. A direct box converts a signal from a guitar from, is it low Z to high Z or high Z to low Z? Actually, it does both. It's straight from the radial engineering website. It says, what's a direct box? Anyway, a direct box is an impedance matching and signal balancing device. DIs convert high impedance instrument signals to mic level balance lines for interface with pro audio equipment such as mixing consoles. A good direct box will ensure proper electrical signals are maintained throughout the signal chain and allow long cable runs without added noise. A good DI box is just as important as a good microphone. So that's a really good summary of it. So a lot of times when people who will use a direct box will be your keyboard player will run the output of their keyboard into a direct box. Some keyboards may have a low Z out anyway. Now, bass players sometimes at some venues will not use or will not be able to use an amp, so they will go directly from their guitar, their bass guitar, into a DI box, and that DI box will then send a signal to the board, and it'll match up the signal from low Z, from high Z to low Z. Acoustic guitars usually, a lot of times will go direct to the board too, and even when they say direct to the board, they're saying direct to the direct box and then to the board, unless you have a low Z output on a guitar. I had a Yamaha Classical Acoustic years ago, and it had a low Z output. It was really cool, so you wouldn't have to worry about a direct box. Another thing, I actually use a direct box at my church right now is we have our amps isolated off the stage, backstage, in isolation booths, all padded up and everything, so we can crank the amps pretty loud into their sweet spot, and then it's not, but they're not interfering with other functions within the church or muddying up the volume on the stage or making the stage volume way too loud. So what we do is, from this is my signal chain at church. It goes from my guitar to my pedal board, and from my pedal board into a DI box that converts my high Z signal to a low Z signal, and then goes into the stage's snake system, sends backstage, comes out of the snake system into another direct box, which converts the signal from low Z back to high Z and goes into my amp. And of course, it acts as somewhat of a buffer so that and it keeps the signal clean as it goes that long distance, because it's, shoot, it could be, yeah, I don't know, 50 feet from where I'm standing to where it winds up with my amp. And that's in a live setting. So I know some of you tone gurus may say, oh man, that you're losing tone on that. But then again, I will go back to, we're not recording, you know, in a studio. In a studio, I would want to have to keep that length of cord really short and as short as possible. But this is a live setting. And, you know, the tone's good enough for me for this situation. And I think they've covered as much ground as we possibly can to get the best tones we can. Because, see, the thing is, we could have these amps sitting out on stage and have a low volume, and they're really getting crappy tone then. Well, not as good a tone, not crappy tone. Crappy tone is subjective, of course. Now then, this brings me to a good article in the January 2012 issue of Guitar Player. It has Michael Anthony and Joe Satriani on the cover of it. This is just a one-page article, just really short, about direct boxes by Michael Molenda. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name right. But basically, he's talking about playing clean and going directly with your electric guitar into a direct box and into your computer for recording or whatever, or into a mixing board and recording, or however you do whatever you're wanting to do. That's really not going to fit my purposes. I don't want to play that clean. Some people do, that's fine. I like dirt. Even my clean tone, I want to have a little hair to it, okay? And I think that's going a lot. I mean, you know, just that enough to warm it up, right? But if you listen to Brad Paisley, there's overdrive in his clean, so it's really kind of cool, unless he's playing acoustic. Now then, I honestly would not go with a direct box from Radio Shack, okay? I just wouldn't do it if it's Radio Shack version or whatever. What I would look at here is, okay, you're on a budget. If you're looking for a budget DI, anything from, I mean, these are, the ones I'm going to name here are from $25 up to $70 in street prices. ARTZ Direct makes one, Samson, and Whirlwind. Whirlwind's a pretty good name. And, of course, the Whirlwind is the one that's $70. They'll pretty much do the job for you. That'd be good enough. But the mid-priced ones, this is where I would probably try to go, that mid-range. You can get anything from a BBE or a Boss or Radial Design or Radial Engineering. The BBE is $150, the Boss is $160, and the Radial is $200. We use the Radials at our church, and I've been very pleased with them. I think we have used the Whirlwind Director in the past as well. I don't know if there's been complaints about those and whatnot. I think the Radial would really do well for anything. If you needed a direct box, that's the one I would recommend, because that's the one really I have the most experience with. I think it'd do well for you in a live setting as well as a studio setting. Now then, say you're putting together a studio and you're wanting really high end, you know, top notch stuff. LR Braggs, Summit Audio, and Avalon, and these range from $300 all the way up to nearly $600. And there's a lot more control on these than your regular run of the mill direct boxes. Like the mid range on down, you might have some some push and pull switches on there for to change some stuff, but not a whole lot. The BBE has a low conductor and process knobs and a couple switches on it, so it makes it a little more controllable. But honestly, for me, I don't want to have to tell my direct box to do too much, you know. I don't know, that's just me. But if you are into wanting to make your, you know, to really tweak a direct box, then you can go in with the LR Braggs, and it has like 10 knobs on it to adjust tone, and Avalon has a boost in tone, and I don't know if I would really want to. I think that Avalon may actually have tubes in it. So, and that's the highest price one. I wouldn't doubt if it doesn't have tubes in it. I wouldn't doubt if it does have tubes in it. Excuse me. But again, you know, $70 for the Whirlwind Director, I'd be happy with that. Samson's always has typically made pretty decent stuff. Don't take this as a glowing endorsement from me about these. I've only had one item that was made by Samson, and but I've worked with a lot of Whirlwind stuff, and they've been pretty good quality stuff, and Radial seems to be really, really good. We use that a lot. So those are the two that I would say, you know, if you can only afford around $100, I would go with the Whirlwind. If you can afford $200 for your DI, then I would go with the Radial Engineering JDI Passive Direct Box. Now then, sounds to me like you're wanting to run stereo to the board. That means you would need two direct boxes, and that would mean then, can you afford $150 on direct boxes, or can you afford over $400 on direct boxes? So anyway, I hope that helps, Shane. It's been more than a month since you asked the question. I sincerely apologize, but it was a very good question. I ran across this. I wanted to have everything together best I could. So that is that. Let's see. What other questions do we have? A while back, I mentioned that I went to the Columbus Guitar Show and ran into a guy who was selling Telecaster bodies. And pretty cheap, too, but they were really good looking. Some were made of swamp ash, and that's the one I bought. He made some from mahogany, which really looked cool. And then pine bodies, too. Be amazed how good a pine body Tele sounds. A Tele doesn't have to weigh 4 tons to sound good. A guitar doesn't have to weigh 4 tons to sound good. If you pick up an old Strat from the 60s or 50s, or a Les Paul from the 50s, if you ever get, you're so lucky to get a hold of, I mean, like a 55 or something like that, because nobody, you know, you're probably not going to be able to get a hold of a 58 or a 59 without, you know, somebody shooting you for grabbing a guitar worth $1 million. But those guitars do not weigh as much as guitars that are made now. Of course, the Les Pauls that are made now are weight relieved. Basically, they're, they have like 9 holes that are about 1.5 inches around drilled into the bodies, which you can't see because there's a cap on it. But anyway, those you know, the pine body Teles don't weigh very much at all. They're very light, easy to handle. They're not going to break your neck on stage playing them. They will be a little neck heavy. I will say that. They may be a little neck heavy, and if that bothers you, that bothers you. If you're used to playing SGs are notoriously neck heavy, which it didn't necessarily bother me all that much. But anyway, I mean, that's not why I was selling mine. I was selling mine to buy trees. So, I know, call me crazy. Brent was asking about hooking him up with the guy who sells Telecaster bodies. If any of you are interested, I mean, you can see on the Facebook page where I've posted photos of that body and how awesome it looks. And I've taken all parts and warm-off necks and put them right into that neck pocket, and it fits like a glove. So, I mean, the guy's tolerances are super tight. They're great. So if you're interested, let me know. Send me an email or post on the Facebook page. Say, hey, man, hook me up with the guy that, you know, the telly bodies, and I'll do that. Now, then Michael posted on the Facebook page, and I've gone back and forth with him a little bit here, and I don't know where he is with this, but I'm wondering if anybody else can chime in. Michael says, hey, Lauren, I'm lost. I can't figure out where to put my EQ pedal or my noise gate. I'm using the EQ for a solo boost in volume and mids, and the noise gate seems like a matter, like no matter where I put it, and I'm getting this weird white noise from it when it's on or off. Help. P.S. Rock on. I said, I would always have EQ after overdrives and distortions. In my opinion, I would always have boosts after overdrives and distortions too. Again, my opinion is I know some folks put boosts before, but that's personal preference. Now for your noise gate causing noise, have you pulled the noise gate completely out of the chain to isolate it and be sure it doesn't make noise when turned on, or just your guitar, or gate, and amp? What noise gate are you using, by the way? Michael says, yeah, I pulled it out and ran it on its own, and it worked. It placed it after my wah, before my drive, and after, but it still hisses. It's a Boss NS2. The amp is a 6505 plus, I think that's PB, really high gain, so lots of white noise. You know, I'm not sure why it would work fine outside of this, the chain, or as opposed to inside the chain. Honestly, Michael, what I would really do in this situation is, and I know this is going to suck, but start with the noise gate. Your guitar going into the noise gate and into your amp. Everything's fine, right? Well, put the very next thing that's right in front of it in there, like your distortion. Put that right in front of that, right in front of your noise gate. Is there still that white noise? And then just slowly build up until you find out this combination of pedal with your noise gate is making the issue, is giving you that white noise. It also may be an issue of where you have it on your the power that's going to it, or there may be a conflict in the power between that pedal and another pedal in the chain. I'm not sure if you're using George L cables. When George L cables go bad, they sound terrible. I love my George L's, but you start moving them around a bit, and they can get kind of weird on you and start sounding really crappy and making terrible noises. I mean, just so much that you have to stop playing and take it out and use a different cable. So Michael, that's how I would go about troubleshooting that issue. I'd love to know what your outcome is with it. If anybody else has any other ideas, feel free to chime in on the Facebook page. You'll be able to find it. It's Michael to the Guitar Podcast. It's easy to spot this one. Anyway, or just throw it out there on the Facebook page, and I'll fire back to Michael. So anyway, love to know. I really hope you get that ironed out. Let me look back here. And it's funny that whenever it's off, it's fine, but whenever you turn it on, it's bad. And running it by itself, it's fine, but placing it after the wah and before a drive and after, but it still hisses before or after. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of conflict between the overdrive and the noise gate. The noise gate is not supposed to make a bunch of noise. That's why it's called a noise gate or noise suppressor. So, oh, this is a good one. Now, this one didn't come to me to the Guitar Podcast, but I wanted to share this one with the audience, see what you all thought. Brian writes, how many Les Paul players top wrap their stop bar on their Les Paul, and what is your opinion of the sound change? Now, me personally, I don't wrap mine over the top. I wrap it right straight through, just like they, you know, just like it was designed from the factory, not the 50s way of rolling, you know, going over. Brian says it changed his a lot. All the darkness sound is all gone. I'm not sure how much I like that, even though I came out of the glam metal era, meaning that he likes a high end. Brian also says it almost sounded like it was through a doubler as well. Took me some fiddling to get it sounding natural again. Very weird. I don't know if the strings were just that bad or if it's due to top wrapping, an aluminum stop bar, too much change. I'll know after I play for a while tomorrow. He says it opened the sound way up or messed it way up. Too early to tell and too late at night to check. He says he has 5 more sets of strings though, and since the bending is easier, he may go with 10s now for more tone. And I was just kind of watching on the sidelines of this one. Until then, at this point, he says, "Help, Lord Hunt, help," which I found really funny. I'm like, okay, you know, I can't hold back now. Brian says it sounded great before, but was kind of dark, which I've heard is standard, but the high G 15th fret bend was just too stiff. Overbending is now a thing of the past, though, because with lower tension, you have to bend the string farther to get it up to pitch, which is my custom when doing bends. My guitar has so much tone, I bet it was the string change. They're a month old, but I only been really playing it these last 2.5 weeks or so. Jeff says, haven't tried it on the Goth yet. Let me know how it turns out in the next couple days. Been moving to stuff, so packed up. And Brian thinks it was the string change. I'm going to skip through a lot of this stuff here. Matthew says he's been playing Les Pauls for 32 years and have never wrapped. Love the straight tone. He talks about stiff bending strings on a Les Paul, and I've never experienced any problems bending a string on a Les Paul. I thought that Les Pauls were notorious for being easier to bend because of the shorter scale, as opposed to like Fenders. They're a slightly longer scale, and just that little bit makes them fight you a little bit more whenever you bend them. And then he says he cranked the stop bar to the body, which I'm like, time out. We don't want to do that. Did I ever comment on here? Oh, he has tons of comments before I finally get to it. Honestly, what I think he's experiencing is that the string changes, maybe those were really old and dead strings, and the string change was just that much better for him. And I'm not sure if it was a brand change. Perhaps wrapping it over the top does make it a significant difference. I don't know. If any of you in the audience have experienced this change, I'd love to know. So then I finally chime in after like 20 posts on the thread. And I asked him, have you been to mylespaul.com? It's a great forum for Les Paul owners. Something I learned when I first got my Les Paul was not to have the stop bar right on the body. I know my first thought was to do just that, but you get better tone with it just a few millimeters off the body. Go figure, right? I have no idea why, but it does. Brian said, I have to test the theory even though tone is somewhat subjective. Absolutely agree there, Brian. Tone is very subjective. So many things with guitar is subjective. And what you really want to get out of your guitar is very subjective too. And there I said, I agree. Tone is very subjective. And we can get to a point where we're splitting hairs over it and spending way too much time and money on the never-ending quest. And Brian says, when I first got mine, and then I cranked the stop bar down and returned quickly, It seemed like some of the mid-range disappeared, but the low end got better. Does this sound familiar, right? I'm thinking, and Brian continues, I'm thinking about unwrapping the tailpiece and then raising it some, and then it won't be quite as loose as it is now, which is cool, and may bring back some of the mid-tones. The piece was off the body about 3/16 of an inch when I got it. That's about where, Brian, I'm saying that's about where mine is. It's about 3/16 off the body, just a smidge. is just enough. You could probably fit a couple medium picks under it, maybe two. And you're going to get the good mid-range response, nice low end. And the thing is, a Les Paul can be pretty bright just because of the maple top. That carved maple top gives it that brightness. When you take that off, which is what an SG is, it gets much darker. You know, I always thought that, well, the Les Paul is a thicker, heavier guitar than an SG, so it should have a darker tone, and it doesn't. It's just funny that way, how different woods can really, really significantly change the tone. And that, my friends, is pretty much all of the questions that I have on Facebook. And the ones that are remaining are much, much more in depth. Take much, much longer, so I will need to get back with these. Some really, really good questions. Also, I need to get back and do some more pick reviews. I've got a bunch of picks on a shelf in my room waiting to be played and demoed on the show. I hope you guys liked those pick reviews. I know some of you said you couldn't believe how much difference a pick would make in the tone or the response of a string and what they could really do. Now me, I tend to still grab my yellow 0.73 millimeter Jim Dunlop picks or my Fender medium picks. I know it's really generic. It's just, I know what I can get so many different things out of them, and I really expect things. But I would say that if I were a studio guitar player and I was very meticulous about what I was really wanting to get out of any different, what I was really wanting to get from a song or out of a guitar tone or whatever, I would be very picky about the picks I would use. I didn't mean to be mean for the pun there, but of course I did. So anyway, I'd love to know if you really like the pick reviews, or if you hated them, if you just can't stand it, if you'd rather I just did them on YouTube or something like that. So you better chime in before I do the next episode, because I may very well be doing them on there, and you'd be fast-forwarding through the podcast going, man, stop playing guitar, and whatever. So I actually feel like I need to get back to playing guitar on here too. So anyway, upcoming things I want to talk about on YouTube videos as well as the podcast. More pentatonic scales, music theory, like circle of fifths, scales, the five must-have guitars. This one, that subject may wind up being like six or seven or eight different episodes, because I could just go on and on and on about that, because the five main guitars, I covered that a bit last episode, but I'd really like to dive in further with that, dig deeper, and then isolate each one of those guitars, because you know, we could say a Les Paul style guitar, well, that could be a Paul Reed Smith, that could be a custom built two humbucker guitar, it could be a Telecaster with two humbuckers. It could be an SG. It could be a Les Paul. Go figure. A Les Paul style guitar is a Les Paul. I want to explore all that. Okay. And with that, we'll pretty much wrap it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the Facebook page. If you like what you heard today and you subscribe using iTunes or Zune or whatever, and they allow you to leave comments and feedback, let them know by writing a review. Thanks a lot for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt, signing off for the Guitar Podcast. Rock on!